Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The American frontier experience is quintessential in our cultural history. From film to television to books, we are all drawn to imagining what it may have been like to experience life during that time. One prime example of this is Laura Ingalls Wilder's series of Little House books. But the perspective of the Ingalls family doesn't reflect every American experience, something children's book author Linda Sue Park wanted to explore more deeply in her latest work, Prairie Lotus. Set in the Dakota Territory during the 1880s, Prairie Lotus is about a girl named Hannah who is determined to fit into her, new community and fulfill her dreams of getting an education, becoming a dressmaker, and making at least one friend. However, the townspeople's prejudice against Asians presents many obstacles for Hannah, who is half Chinese. Young readers navigate this new territory with Hannah, and to share more insight, Prairie Lotus author Linda Sue Park joins me by phone. She begins by explaining the role of historical fiction in examining our own world today.
One of the things, whenever I write or read historical fiction, the question that I keep at the forefront of my mind is, who else was there? Who else was there? Because history gets written by and about the people who are in power, and that's who features in our historical narrative. But history isn't just famous people and powerful people. History is all of us. So whenever I'm thinking about something that happened in the past, I always want to explore the question, who else was there? And so we have this westward expansion that you just described, and it's mostly about these fearless pioneers who were all white, setting out and settling this supposedly, you know, uncivilized land. But there are many, many answers to the question, who else was there? And what has gotten left out of the narrative that so many of us are familiar with from school and popular culture and the media is the stories of people of color and other marginalizations. So that was a huge thing for me. You know, that's what I always want to examine. I want to examine the stories that haven't been told widely enough yet.
Right, and many people don't consider the implications of the Chinese and other Asian population presence out west. Largely the Chinese workers in helping construct the railroad are examined, or rather their mistreatment during that period. But it's not often examined outside of California, where a lot of the workers were predominantly staying. So Hannah and her father move beyond California in a place where people aren't even, you know, perhaps haven't even seen anyone of Chinese heritage before. So why did you want to place them in this town to show their struggles of how they've had to become nomadic? And you also mentioned the riots of Los Angeles, which I imagine many young readers haven't even heard about.
Right. That's exactly correct, that what we hear about Asians in this phase of history in America was that the Chinese workers helped build the railway. And that's kind of pretty much where it ends, right? Oh, there were these railway workers, and they met at the spike in Utah. And then it's like they've been erased otherwise. But they stayed here. They didn't all get shipped home, right?
Exactly.
They stayed and settled and became Americans. And so that's a story that I very much wanted to explore. And again, it's an echo of my own experience growing up in the Midwest in the 1960s when I lived in a small town in Illinois where we were one of the only Korean families in the whole town. And in fact, I think the only Korean family until I was 8 or 9 years old. So that Hannah's experiences in being Asian when her neighbors are not is very much drawn from my own experiences. And of course, the final thread that sort of was my way in or tying it all together was that as a young girl, I had loved the Laura Ingalls Wilder Little House books, as so many of us had. And they were set in the Midwest, you know, where I was growing up. And night after night, I would lie in bed and I would make up stories in which I was Laura's best friend. And as I, you know, got older and more aware of things, I realized that my nighttime imaginings were almost impossible. First of all, there were no Koreans in the 1800s in the U.S. So I had to change myself to Chinese. And although my neighbors at the time would have said there wasn't much difference as a Korean-American, I sure knew that I wasn't Chinese. But that's one thing I had to reimagine. And then there is, people are now becoming more and more aware, a lot of racism in the Little House book. And especially as an adult, this was really troubling. I had loved these books as a child, and so what did I do with that? You know, do I just, you know, how do I reconcile my childhood love of those books with my awareness of their shortcomings today, of their very benighted attitudes? And so this book is my attempt to have a conversation with the Little House books and to include some of the stories and some of the attitudes that were either left out or left wanting in those books.
Right. As you mentioned, there's a distinct nostalgia that we associate with those Little House on the Prairie books. And this period of time is distinct in American culture, in literature. And having Hannah's story mixed into this context has the potential of great power and influence, because the place that books serve for children, you know, all of us, just like as you mentioned with your example, all of us remember a favorite childhood book. So what's your hope of introducing Hannah's story to young readers today in setting the conversation off on the right foot and not having something that, as you mentioned with Little House on the Prairie, you go back and realize like, oh, I didn't realize these things about this literature.
Right. I mean, that is the sort of wonderful open secret about being a writer of books for young people, is that we get to write the books that people remember their whole life. And, of course, that's really special. So I guess my aim in writing any of my books for young children, but, of course, in particular, Prairie Lotus, is to not so much give young readers answers as to get them to ask questions, you know, to be curious, to say, I didn't know that, and I want to learn more. So maybe they look at the cover of the book and they see, well, that's not the face that you expect to see under a sunbonnet. I wonder what that's about. And, you know, that they finish the book and think, there are more things I would like to know. I always say that, you know, when a reader finishes one of my books, I hope that what they want to do is to reach for another book.
I think Prairie Lotus also tackles important lessons, and I feel, of course, as we grow up and the things we're exposed to or read or what our parents want to read, want to create an escape or dive into an ideal world. But, you know, this book shows that life isn't fair, and Hannah is acutely aware of the unfairness, despite...
Oh, I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
I actually think that's the whole function of what are called middle grade novels, which is a confusing term for the sort of the general public. It doesn't mean middle school. It means, you know, independent reading from grade about third grade through middle school. And I think the whole purpose of middle grade is to introduce young readers to the notion that life isn't fair. And so what are you going to do about that? Are you going to become bitter, you know, and spend your life complaining about the unfairness of life? Or are you going to do what you can to try to make your corner of the world a little bit fairer? And I think that's what all the great middle grade literature is about. Now, I mean, I don't want any of my books to be all sort of gloom and doom and isn't this world a terrible place, because it's not. It's full of beauty and wonder and people who are good to each other as well. And it's full of humor and laughter. So, you know, Prairie Lotus is obviously not a yuck-it-up book, but I did try to have some moments of lightness in there, and the details of daily life, which was also very important to me. That's what so many people love about the Little House books, is this kind of granular detail about, you know, things like food and building houses and making dresses. And again, that's all part of the conversation that is in Prairie Lotus. is that history, once again, isn't just huge events and big famous people and headlines. It's what we do every day. And that is, there's a special focus in Prairie Lotus, as in the Little House book, on women's lives and the contribution that women make to everyday life and in turn to history.
Yeah, I'd say women's roles, especially during this time, was a strong indicator of your family's not just survival, but success, because the tasks of daily lives are so mounting and they need to be done every day. So what kind of research did you find yourself diving into when it came to life during this period, or even dressmaking, because it's such a big part of Hannah's life?
Yes. Well, the dressmaking, obviously there are some things that have changed, and yet there are many things that haven't. So, for example, using a pattern to cut out a dress is something Hannah would have done in almost exactly the same way as it is done today, right? People today have sewing machines, and she did not have a sewing machine, so she sewed by hand, which is something that I am familiar with and I can do, and I did my home ec in junior high, as it was called back then, and I do know how to sew a garment. I do love the needle art, but I'm more of a knitter and embroiderer than I am an actual seamstress. But my mother and grandmother were both excellent seamstresses. My mother made many of our clothes when I was growing up, so that ability of Hannah's is modeled on my mother and my grandmother. So that was not so much research as just a part of my daily life, you know, which is where you get really lucky. but for other details, of course, it was a lot of books and websites and documentaries and especially travel. For me, I find it very important to actually spend some time in the spaces about which I'm writing. So I had grown up in the Midwest, and I knew me my prairie. there was still a lot of open space, not so much now, but when I was growing up, there was a lot of open space where I was living, and yet that was Illinois, not Dakota Territory, or what today is South Dakota. So I traveled there, actually a couple of times, to experience what it was like to actually have my body in that physical space.
And in this book, outside of the physical spaces that these characters inhabit, I think it's also important to note how well we go into Hannah's mind. And there's one section that kind of stood out to me that I think any young reader or middle grade reader can connect to. And it said that for most of her life, Hannah made quick conclusions about the people she met in an effort to guess how they might treat her. The trick was to keep her own conclusions light, never giving them too much weight in case it turned out they were just plain wrong. So, you know, obviously this is heightened tenfold during the period that Hannah is living in as a half-Chinese young woman. But I think kids and even adults, obviously, like we all can identify in approaching people and things in life with trepidation.
Right. And whenever you're new, you know, whenever you're in a situation with which you're unfamiliar, and again, that heightenedness or that exponential experience, if you are from a marginalized group, that it's something that you come up against not just in new situations, but in almost all situations. If you are the only whatever in the room, an analogy that I like to use to try to connect with people is because I work with a lot of women who are teachers and librarians and writers of children's books and so forth, is that feeling that when you're the only woman in a room full of men, you know, there's some stress there that exists on a kind of a different level than if it's just a group of mixed gender. And so if you are the only person of color in a room, which happens so often, right, that you have a similar experience of how of that kind of trepidation. So, yes, I think everybody can experience it. And there are so many people, young people included, who for whom it's just a fact of daily life.
And it's important to foster these conversations in the classroom, right? Because these kids might be experiencing these kind of things at school to perhaps not the knowledge of other classmates who aren't aware.
Oh, I certainly hope so. I think that a huge part of the conversation that needs to happen is that the developing of awareness in each of us, but especially for those in the dominant culture who have had the wonderful luxury of not having to develop this awareness for so long. But times are changing, and I hope we are evolving as humans and in our relationships to each other, although it can often feel like a couple steps forward and two and a half back, that I hope we keep at least trying to make forward progress and to develop more empathy and more connection to the people around us, especially those who might at first glance seem to be different.
I wanted to get your thoughts on a recent event in the literature world. So back in February of this year, Barnes & Noble canceled the Black History Month initiative after critics complained about its diverse edition series, which basically featured non-white versions of characters on iconic novels that range from Romeo and Juliet to Frankenstein. So, you know, in a world where things like this still happen, how do you hope Prairie Lotus can, you know, just set the course right?
Right. I could see the good intention behind that initiative. There was just a lot of not understanding, too, you know, that to give an example, sometimes writers, especially white writers of children's books, will say that I'm going to make my character an animal or a robot because that way it doesn't have a race and all children can relate to it. And it is true that non-human characters can have a kind of appeal in that way. And yet, those writers are fooling themselves if they think that their rabbit is not a white rabbit, if you see what I mean.
Yes.
That it, you know, they're writing from their perspective, and so their writer, their rabbit, is a stand-in for a white child, you know, if they're writing from their own experience. So, no, you couldn't do an edition of Little House on the Prairie and put an Asian girl on the cover, right? If you have an understanding and awareness of what race means in the lives of people of color and other marginalization, then the whole story is going to be a different story. So that is definitely what Prairie Lotus is attempting to do, to say, no, I myself could not have had the same Little House on the Prairie story as Laura Ingalls did, but people like me were still there. And, you know, the danger of that, what Aditya calls that, the danger of the single story, is that if we get history or stories or narratives from only one point of view over and over and over, they become accepted as a kind of truth, when in fact they are so incomplete as to be not true. You know, if you tell a story from only one side, that story can actually be untrue because you are not getting all the information to make a complete picture. So Prairie Lotus is an attempt to add some information, you know, to add a perspective, to make the story of the American West a little more complete.
Linda Sue Park is the author of bestseller A Long Walk to Water, as well as the Newbery Medal book A Single Shard. Her latest middle grade novel is called Prairie Lotus, and she'll be at the North Shore Library on March 5th to talk about it.